Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes!
Hot offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up?
Oh, yes! Spurs are on their way to Madrid. Tottenham's gonna do it again.
This is actually happening.
What's going on?
This is actually happening. 5 years ago, when we started this podcast,
right? Let's. Where were we?
I had actually, right before our first ever episode, I had just returned from a trip to London where I went to White Hart Lane. It was the Tim Sherwood year. Like, that's where they were.
Ha!
Liverpool. What were you, eighth?
No. The year we started was the year of Liverpool's title race.
Oh, that's right.
But, like, within a few months, Suarez had gone, Balotelli had been signed, and Ricky Lambert. And it was just a pretty miserable slalom under Brendan Rodgers until we ended up. Here's a better one. So, 4 years ago, 2015, the pod was approaching its first year anniversary. Mm-hmm. You, Spurs, have been knocked out of the round of 32 of the Europa League to Fiorentina.
Yeah, the Soldado moment.
And we got knocked out to Besiktas. Like,
the soccer gods have given us a 5-year anniversary present that we never could have possibly imagined.
Think how turgid Spurs were in the group stage.
Think of
that night in Zagreb when Belgrade, where Liverpool lost. And we thought, they'll have to focus on the league now, you know. Like, just, oh my God.
How did we get here?
I don't know.
A caught offside cup for the Champions League. Like, if this happened in, like, a Europa League quarterfinal, we would have been like, this, Liverpool and Tottenham, like, this is a big deal. We got to make a, this is for all of Europe.
Someone that, by the way, your tweets have been unbelievable. I've been inundated. It's impossible to like or reply to all of them. But somebody said, this is for all the marbles.
I just couldn't stop, like, laughing. I'll say that we'll talk about both games in great detail in just a few moments. But there's just, like, this is just sports emotion in, like, all its glory. These games were just, it was just every part of, you know, every feeling that a human being can feel encapsulated in 90-minute windows. It's
high-intensity emotion that the likes of which we haven't seen, let's be honest, in this competition, in the last few years that has swung around and we're starting to see it more regularly.
Well, yeah, some of those Real Madrid-Atletico Madrid finals were truly riveting. I mean,
they were riveting, but they weren't like this.
Well, this, there was just an unexpected nature to the way these games played out that adds an element that is just...
I think the fact that once upon a time, as Jonathan Wilson tweeted, I remember a time when a 3-goal lead mattered going into a second leg. And those days are gone.
Well, look, you know what? I was going to say it still does matter. I mean, more often than not, even today, when you have a 3-goal lead, you do advance. We just remember the ones where you don't.
How about going in one goal behind and making it into a 3-goal lead and having to climb that mountain within an hour of football?
A couple housekeeping things before we get into the games. Like we've been saying for the last couple weeks, 5 stars for 5 years. 5-year anniversary. Go on our iTunes, give us a 5-star review. And in your 5-star review, if you have a favorite moment from the 5-year run of the podcast, put it in there. And then starting next week, we're going to start combing through. And then at the ends of podcasts, we'll shout out who the person was that wanted the moment. And we'll throw it in there as like kind of like the final scene of each podcast. So please keep doing that. We've gotten a lot of responses already and they're great. It's fun actually reading them and just like remembering a lot of those moments from over the years. Also, I got to say this, please, now more than ever, subscribe to our specific Caught Offside podcast feed. We had said that if enough people start subscribing, then we'll put in specific content just in that feed, not in the ESPN FC feed where a lot of people get access to our show. Well, we have already acted on that promise because, lo and behold, Liverpool goalkeeping legend Bruce Grobbelaar was in studio with us today to talk about yesterday's incredible Liverpool game, his incredible career, his incredible life story. It's 30 minutes and it's great stuff. So Liverpool fans and non-Liverpool fans alike, go into the Caught Offside podcast channel on Apple Podcasts, however you get your podcasts. We have our own feed. Find it and you'll find that. That is exclusive content to that. You won't find it on the ESPN FC feed.
And you won't find a goalkeeper that's gone from the Rhodesian Civil War to Anfield. Well, you will. You'll find one.
He talks about all of it.
Which, I mean, it's incredible.
And he talks in depth about how he consumed yesterday's Liverpool game, and his feelings.
And why nights at Anfield are so special.
I told him, I flat out said to him that, well, I hear people say it and I roll my eyes.
I thought he was going to come across the computer at you and wring your neck.
There was a moment of quiet.
There was.
Should I have said that?
And the man is crazy. He's such a crazy guy with a crazy story.
But he was great. He was in promoting the Western Union Cup because Liverpool are going to be coming to the U.S. this summer.
I mean,
that ticket just became as if it wasn't already going to be a hot ticket going into this. JJ, shall we? Shall we do this? Shall we talk? Shall we talk about the thing that I never thought we would be talking about, and that is a Liverpool Tottenham Champions League final coming up.
Right. Let's begin with Spurs in Amsterdam.
Lucas Moura is running in now. Lucas Moura! Llorente! And Onana has kept it out twice. Lucas Moura. Lucas Moura's done it again. Incredible. Comes to Dele Alli. Through to Lucas Moura. Lucas Moura has fired Spurs through to Madrid. To the Champions League final!
Oh my God in heaven. Guy Mowbray on the call, he's great, but he has been sensational throughout this competition. He was on the Tottenham Man City calls. He was on, I think, both legs of this. And incredible.
He would tell you that the drama presented itself and he just called it. And what drama. What a second half. And possibly one of the greatest individual performances we've ever seen inside of 45 minutes of football at this level.
By Lucas Moura, which we'll talk about in a sec, but I do want to start in the first half because, I mentioned the quote the other day from Moussa Sissoko, who had said, we know Ajax, we know what they're going to do, they're not going to sit back, they're going to play their game. And in some respects, that is a tip of the cap to Ajax, that they believe so staunchly in their way of doing things, and it has worked for them, and it worked for them today. Sissoko was right. They did come out, and, I mean, the first 10 minutes, it was dominant. I mean, it was really frightening watching how that was just spiraling so quickly for Tottenham. Ajax jumped out to the quick lead, as has been kind of Tottenham's MO as of late, and you felt like this was going to go bad quickly. And then I give Spurs credit because they gathered themselves. I think they understood that 1-0 didn't really matter.
They
were always going to need two goals. Or, look, obviously it would have been nice for that goal to have not happened, and 1-0 for Spurs could have been in play to get it to extra time. But they pretty much always knew, look, we need two anyway. So let's not lose ourselves here. And in fairness to them, they did rebound. And they probably could have had three goals in that first half, and you just start seeing, you know, I had said that Son was getting a goal. Well, he certainly had his chances, but a weak attempt on net. It just wasn't quite clicking for them. You know, Son put one off the post, and you see it get to Lucas Moura, and he just can't quite get his leg around quick enough. And I'm thinking, this is the difference right now. I'm watching Liverpool yesterday, and Jordan Henderson's first goal, you know, Liverpool needed to score early. Henderson puts one on, and the bounce happens to go right to Origi. For Spurs, it just doesn't quite fall at Moura's feet on the rebound. Like those, you start thinking about those little things and saying, these are the things that need to go your way to get the win. And in the first half for Tottenham, they were certainly not going Spurs' way.
What was going in true Champions League style was the bizarre start, the fast start by Ajax, where you had a goal very, very quickly. And like you said, it didn't really change the task at hand for Spurs. But what it did say was, Ajax mean business again, and Spurs are in trouble here. Trippier failing to pick up De Ligt, that whole kind of that move there. I mean, that was unconscionable what Trippier had. And then later in the half, for him to overcommit and be out of position to lose possession of the ball, and for Tadic to get down the line to square to Ziyech, who finished brilliantly. Honestly, when the net rattled with that, what was your thoughts?
Oh my God.
It's over.
I mean, I didn't text you, but because I had been texting with another buddy of mine who was pretty hardcore rooting for Spurs, and my friend Jordan and I just texted him straight out. I said, "Game over." I'll tell you right, like, that was it for me when that happened. I do want to go back to the first goal though, the De Ligt goal, because at halftime on TNT they were talking about that.
Was it a foul or not?
Right, because well, look, here's the thing. I mean, I'm not surprised that it wasn't called, but look, Vertonghen is clearly picked off of, like, he. We're blaming Trippier, but maybe the plan is for him to let De Ligt go and for Vertonghen
to pass him on. Yeah, but
and Vertonghen can't do that because he's, who was it for Ajax that was blocking him off? Van de Beek.
Van de Beek.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed quite clear. I wasn't, you know, it was one of those where I wasn't going to throw a temper tantrum at halftime when I saw it, but I do wonder if maybe Trippier is taking a little too much flack because the plan was for Vertonghen to then eventually pick him up.
And now, as bad as that was, you definitely look at it as a mismatch and think, even if Trippier goes with him, is he going to be able to stop him? My biggest problem was there was a moment around 21 minutes and someone tweeted in response to what I'm about to say, well, the possession's 50-50, where Ajax just dominated possession, passed the ball around in these triangles and were cutting Spurs open. And Spurs couldn't get the ball. And as Jonathan Liu alluded to in his match report, which he's done two tremendous match reports on the whistle over the last 2 days, and they're well worth going back and reading. But he said he made a midfield of Spurs that is not slow and old, looks slow and old. And I just thought, what happened in the first leg, second half, won't happen again. Can I read you something?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a guy who I felt, you asked on the rundown who came up short. I know I'm jumping ahead here, but I want to talk about Ajax here. This is from Reuters, and their manager, Ten Hag, said this after the first leg. This is the quote. "Our minds were a bit too much on defending the lead," Ten Hag said, "but it was also a show of strength by Spurs. It showed we have to cross another frontier tomorrow. We are confident we can do it. We are fit and we are eager." Now, for me, that's a recognition, which he also made in his post-match comments, of them sitting back in the second half and allowing Spurs to build up momentum. Once that happened, they couldn't take it back. They couldn't stem the tide. It's like having your finger in a dam. Once you take it out and the flow starts building and the pressure starts behind the wall, the cracks appear and it's over. I couldn't believe that Ajax would play that way again. There was a moment in the first half where Hakim Ziyech was enjoying himself so much that he pressed the Spurs fullback Trippier. Trippier plays it back to Lloris. He sprints. Now, this is like roadrunner stuff. He sprints and he goes in on Lloris. Lloris plays the ball out to the halfway line on the far side and it's picked up by, I can't remember who it was, a midfielder, and he sprints all the way around to press him. I'm like, you're going to be absolutely gassed. What are you doing? Like,
well, they were running on adrenaline at that point.
It was total abandon. It was chaos football. And I say chaos, it was organized chaos. Oh. Great triangles, moving Spurs out of the way. But to then not do, or to completely seem to forget how to do that in the second half and fall back towards your end box, your 18-yard line, your own box, is unconscionable. I cannot understand it.
One of the things that surprised me most about this match, which kind of speaks a little bit to what you're saying right now, in watching that first half, and maybe I got sucked into watching Ajax play that way with that much energy, and from having watched Tottenham over the last month, even against Manchester City, which in the Champions League, which turned into one of Tottenham's greatest triumphs, you know, but that second leg, I mean, it's kind of a miracle that Tottenham got through with that goal being disallowed at the end on kind of a fluky bounce off Christian Eriksen. You know, I've watched Tottenham lately, and they just look done. They just looked worn out, whether that be through injury, whether that be just through a long season in a number of different competitions.
All those things.
So I'm watching the first half, and especially after the Ziyech goal goes in, I just think they just, it's not for lack of effort. They just don't have it anymore. Like, they have hit the wall. And I think Tottenham fans have been conditioned to feel that way because it's how the last few seasons have ended for Spurs. Title challenges that petered out. We've seen this from them. And so I think you've seen it before. You're watching this in front of you right now, and you just believe they just can't go any further. And you want to applaud the effort. And then the second half happens. And, like, what did Lucas Moura take at halftime?
I mean, hang on a second, though. If you want to pick a consistent thread throughout these two games for Spurs, a piece of hope from that forward line, which was bereft of ideas at times, it was Lucas Moura. In that first half, even against Ajax, Andrew, when in the first leg, when he drove and got on the ball and drove at that defence, they did not like it. He was immense over both legs, over 180 minutes.
His speed that he showed, really, on everything he does, and he has no other gear. He is always full speed all the time, and I give him all the credit in the world for that. But like the afterburners that he turned on to get to the first, to get to Dele Alli's ball on the first goal, to kind of like thread through two defenders and still have the composure to finish at the end of it. Amazing. Amazing.
Can I say something as well? Can I add Dele Alli into the mix there? The weight on his passes for when he was involved with the Moura goals.
Yeah, and he fed Sun in the first half, and when Sun kind of had a meek effort on net. Dele Alli was sensational too. Probably should have had a goal himself if not for an incredible save from Onana on that volley from Dele Alli.
That close one that was, yeah. Well, actually, again, when Spurs didn't score that, I thought...
It was still 2-0. Yeah. You're right. It's another one of those moments. I mean, I'm watching the game while at work, and that was... I feel bad for the guy who I work with, who kind of sits in front of me. He can't see me. And so, you know, he's going about his doing his job or whatever, and then every once in a while, he must have been terrified because he would just get... like these bangs out of nowhere and like sudden like yelling and cursing for me and just like then Tottenham starts scoring and sudden screams. Like it must have just been like, what is going on behind me? Now he was invested too.
Sure.
RJ. He like got
sucked in. It seems like the whole country was.
And then the second goal for Tottenham to get it to 2-2. You know, again, like with Dele Alli's moment shortly before that, Fernando Llorente, how does he not score? But this miscommunication between Onane and the defender.
Shona.
Like these little moments and the ball squeaks free and Lucas Moura, who dribbles between defenders, gets space, whips one around for the goal.
I'm afraid in the replays that we'll see in the future, it will all be the winning goal. And quite rightly, because that was the pinnacle moment for Spurs in the game. But his feet in the box to dig out something and to leather it home. Between, it felt like it went between someone's legs my brain is fried. There was a gap there and he found it. Was just unbelievable. And then you're thinking, this is so on.
Well, then, yes. Now the world is reinvested in a game that it had kind of given up on. And there's always that voice in the back of my head. It's Spurs. It's Spurs. Like, this is what they do. I said to you before we started recording that there was a point when we got... to the 87th minute on the corner kick, and the ball falls to Vertonghen, former Ajax player, bloodied face in the previous match, able to go in the second leg, chance to be a hero, been with the club forever, it feels like.
Literally a masked avenger.
Yeah. And it falls to him in that moment to be the hero. No one near him, 6 yards out, and he heads it off the bar. Comes right back to him. Second attempt, put on net, cleared off the line. And that's the you drop your head in your hands moment and you think, yeah, it's Spurs. You knew that they were going to suck you back in and you just knew that there was going to be that moment where you thought you had it won, like against Juventus in the Champions League last year, you know, when it fell off the post in stoppage time. Like, and this was that moment. And the fact that like while fans around the world might have put their head in their hands, they never did.
No.
They never did. And once again, long ball in the 95th minute.
Whoa.
Okay, stop me.
Let's back up there, Sparky.
Yeah.
Right before that, there was a beautiful, I won't say vindication, but for a man who's been highly criticized, the Spurs goalkeeper, Ziyech again has the chance to finish it. It's over. And Hugo Lloris pulls off one of the most important saves, probably the most important save in the history of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. The most, I'm happy to say that. Because if that goes in, you're done. It's over.
Yeah.
And then it's a long ball lumped towards Llorente. Another man who is, I don't know how some players on this team will be viewed in the future, but he's written his name into Spurs' lore.
They're all gods now.
Right. And he flicks that on perfectly into Dele Alli's path. And what's required there is just ice in your veins, a coolness. And he slides a perfect ball into Lucas Moura. And what's even more amazing, as we see in the replay, there's 2 feet there. two defenders there, ready. Andrew, nine times out of ten, that's blocked. That's stopped. He doesn't hit it particularly well, but he hits it right in the corner past Inanna.
Side netting.
And history's written.
Comes to Dele Alli, through to Lucas Moura! Lucas Moura has fired Spurs through to Madrid to the Champions League final.
And Pat, I might make that my ringtone.
I think the gif we should all share for the coming month is Pochettino on the grass.
The man
in a $500 Hugo Boss suit. Just
in tears. The emotion from him was maybe what was most jarring of the whole scene at the end of the game.
Because that's not really who he is.
No, he's, and I won't say that he's not stoic. I don't know that that's the right word, but there is this kind of way about him that he's just always kind of...
measured?
Yeah. You know, even when things are choppy there, and you know, he'll say things that maybe you don't always want to hear him say, but his general way about him is fairly even keeled.
He doesn't even get... I mean, he doesn't get as ratty as Jurgen Klopp gets on a regular basis. You know, he's... I don't know. He's... stoic isn't a bad word. I don't know why you don't like it.
Because he... because he's not like a dull man. I don't want to give off that that feeling of him. But just to see him, this outpouring of emotion from him, and you understand why, because these last few years for Tottenham have been, while great, you know, there's been this kind of like tinge of disappointment that has kind of overshadowed a lot of this era.
An era of sadness.
Yeah, and he's...
jobs unfinished.
Right, and he's had to kind of live with that, you know, the stadium situations, you know, the inactivity in the transfer market. He, earlier this year, at the center of the Manchester United managerial rumors, like, he's dealt with, you know, a decent amount while he's been at this club, and I think this was just kind of, even though they haven't won a trophy here, it just felt like this moment was a culmination of like a validation, basically, of this entire era for Tottenham under Pochettino.
I think he's been fighting within the club and without. You know, he's fighting other teams on a daily basis, trying to keep Spurs in that upper echelon while a new stadium goes up, while he has no money spent on transfers. And there was a real sense of, like, the only incoming player to Tottenham Hotspur scores the hat-trick in 18 months. You know, there is a certain... there's something there. It's crazy when you think about it.
Lucas Moura scoring this hat-trick becomes just the fifth player in Champions League history to register a hat-trick in a semi-final or final. Would you like to give a shot at the others, or should we just power on?
Go on, tell me.
Ronaldo in 2017 for Real Madrid in the semis. Lewandowski, when he was at Dortmund in the semifinals in 2013, he actually scored four. Ivica Olic for Bayern Munich in 2000 in the semifinal, and then Alessandro Del Piero for Juventus in the 98 semifinal, and Lucas Moura.
I mean, when your name is written up there with Del Piero, that's pretty special.
Ronaldo, Lewandowski, yeah. Del Piero, Moura. Now, look, he was already kind of etching his name into Tottenham lore when he scored the goal against Barcelona at the Camp Nou in the final group stage game to get Tottenham. Well, not on maybe not on more of like an international basis, but among the Tottenham faithful, I think that was a moment that would never be forgotten.
But this is a guy who's not a first name on a team sheet kind of guy. He's a...
he may not even, if Harry Kane is back, he may not even start the final.
I don't want to jump ahead.
No, because we have got plenty of time.
But I will say there's... beware the Diego Costa syndrome from 2014. The talismanic center forward who is not 100% fit, and you start him and take him off. It's much better to bring him on with 15 left than it is to start him and take him off then. Honestly, with the fluidity and the way that that front three can play together, I'm not changing a whole lot.
Oh, if he's healthy, how do you not start him? But you're right. If he's healthy, we'll have to wait and see.
We should talk about Ajax a little bit. I have a little something here. You ask what happens next for the losing team, and I jumped on that because I saw a line again from Jonathan Liu's match report that sums things up. It's a little bit grim. Ajax dominated large sections of the 180 minutes of this tie, and against about as flawed a side as you can realistically expect to face at this side of the competition, looked good value for their first Champions League final in more than two decades. but the closer it got, the harder they seemed to grasp at it. In defence, they dropped deeper, trying to thwart Tottenham, but instead offering only encouragement. In attack, chances came and went, agonisingly begging. It will take them months, years to get over this. Perhaps they never will. Well, they won't, because as a collective, they'll never play again together. I do notice what he saw. There was this gaping hole on Tagliafico and Daley Blind's side that opened up, and Spurs just drove into it so regularly. I'm like, where's their fullback? Well, they played on one side like they were down to 10 men in that second half at times. There is a sadness about this, because in the modern game, a team that, you know, the bottom side in the Premier League will take in more money than the champions of the Dutch Eredivisie. You know, in a time where you're breaking your kind of regular transfer rules to bring in a Dusan Tadic, that was seemed like something of an extravagance to them, and that was 13 million.
I know.
In this time, it does feel like something that's so organically put together, and that it's failed at this point. It does really, it's jarring.
I'm not saying that they're not a great club, but what they've done here is a little bit like catching lightning in a bottle. And now you're going to have to ask them to do it again. It just seems, you're right. It seems there is a sadness to it.
Because we thought, for one moment, we thought, and I still believe, and we'll talk next week when I get a chance about teams like Getafe and the Champions League, but we still believe in the Leicester Cities, and we still believe in teams, the Rosenbergs, teams that can come into this and compete. But it's jarring.
Fair or not, I can't help but continuously compare them to Monaco from a few years ago, who reached the Champions League semifinal and didn't advance, and look at the state of Monaco now. Will Ajax go the same route? I don't know. I have no idea, and it may not be a fair comparison, but I just can't help but look at that as the model for kind of a club of that stature. I mean, I know Ajax is more of a global brand and has had, you know, a great history of European success. But where they're at now, you're right. It's going to be very difficult for them. Like you said, we know De Jong has gone to Barcelona. De Ligt is most likely headed somewhere.
Neres, who didn't play tonight, has been linked with
with Liverpool.
Liverpool, Spurs, and Chelsea.
Yeah.
Although Chelsea have had pretty bad.
Their transfer ban was upheld.
Tough.
That's not good for them. Ziyech, will he? I mean, pick a name. Other than maybe Daley Blind, I would imagine. Like, could you see Tadic making another move?
No, I don't think so.
At this point in his career, wouldn't think so either.
Not when this has been such a rip-roaring success. To go from Southampton and the struggles at the bottom of the Premier League to the Champions League semi-final, he will be hurting tonight. They all will. And I think, there's a lot of characters there. Edwin van der Sar, Mark Overmars, and even the manager who have endeared themselves to people on this run, that they seem to be building the club the right way. And it's sad.
I don't want to make this sound funereal for Ajax, because unlike Monaco, it would be nothing short of shocking for Ajax to at least not remain at or near the top of their domestic league for, what, the next decade, 20 years, 30 years, forever. Whereas Monaco had this plummet through Ligue 1, I don't see that happening with Ajax. So their Champions League days are far from over. They will continue to compete in this competition. They will continue to get out of group stages, and there are still great days ahead for them. But this was a team that could have won a European Cup, and that's not going to be an easy feat for them to repeat moving forward. There's no question about that. But it is Tottenham that go through. Before we get out, I did want to play for you Lucas Moura after the game, because he's a deity now. There's going to be a statue of him outside of the new White Hart Lane at some point.
There's going to be a statue of him in your front garden. I can't wait for when you gently... what's on your nightstand? Is it a picture of your child, a picture of your wife?
A lamp and a clock.
All right. Is there?
I have pictures all over the house, but not on my nightstand.
There is going to be a picture of your wife replaced at some point with
Lucas.
Yeah.
Here he was after the game on the win.
I always believed that it was possible to come here to win, to go to the final, and we fight. That's what we need to do. Put our intensity in the second half was amazing, and everyone did really well. And so I need to enjoy this moment. It's impossible to explain.
I still don't even really know what happened today. Tottenham are in. All right, we're going to go ahead. We'll take a very quick break. When we come back on the other side, it's your turn, my friend.
Yep.
Liverpool in one of the... I mean, these are really two... I don't know how you rank these in terms of, like, on the drama scale. It's just been back-to-back days of just the greatest soccer that you could hope to witness. Please don't go anywhere. More coming right up.
And it's Henderson driving on. Henderson! And the goal for Origi. Hard and low. Yes, two! Ronaldo! Shaqiri. It's in. It's incredible. It's Wijnaldum. Make it quickly. Oh, wonderful thinking. Origi, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant from Liverpool. And for Barcelona, chaotic, catastrophic. And it's four. And they do lead now.
Mother of God. When did you think? When did you think that it could happen?
Can I say something? Can I admit something?
Oh no, you didn't believe.
Before, I kept it kind of quiet because you know sometimes there's nothing worse than believing too hard and believing in fairy tales. But early on in the game, Shaqiri pulled a shot across the goal. Before Origi's first goal, and I'm like, they look rattled. What are you doing? The defending, the reaction of their centre backs, the looks on their faces. I was like, what? It's that easy to get at them tonight? And I thought, okay. But when I really felt it was the double punch. And the double punch was the Wijnaldum goal followed by the Wijnaldum goal. It reminded me of, and again, I always go back to it, of what we did last season. I know it was later in the game, but the rapid fire goals. Pep said about the league game where we beat Manchester City, when it gets to 2-1, okay, we must not panic. This is okay. We must be calm. Barca were anything but calm. The minute that second goal goes in, they're panicking. They're absolutely panicking. And what you got to do is batten down the hatches. Make sure there's not a third. There was a third inside 2 minutes.
I know.
And my head exploded. And I was, this is on. They're bottling it. Right in front of our eyes, they are bottling it. Go at them. Go for the jugular. But I never thought that the third goal would, or the winning goal. Sorry, the fourth goal. The goal to take us to the Champions League final. I was looking at extra time. I was looking at penalties. I never thought they would concede off a corner in the fashion that they did.
Well, you didn't think a 20-year-old kid would think to do a quick corner with the entire Barcelona team just asleep on the field? That's not a normal way for a Champions League to end?
Can I tell you, first of all, I want you to play the BBC Radio 5 Live audio, which is one of the great calls. Ian Dennis and Alan Shearer, drink this in.
He's standing in front of him, he's blocking him. Oh, it comes in! Oh, it's a corner! It's Origi! Liverpool 4, Barcelona 0! And Liverpool may well have produced the greatest European comeback ever! The greatest European comeback ever! Unbelievable!
Oh my word! How clever Trent Alexander-Arnold! We talk about crosses, they go to sleep! He takes the early one, he whips it in, Origi! There's no one around him! Free shot, 6 yards out! Wow!
There's no one around him! Unbelievable! And it was a look, like a look across a dance floor. He was leaving that for Shaqiri. And as he walks out, he catches Origi's eye. And he sees them arguing. Now, Simon Hughes in The Independent wrote how Liverpool's video analysts had noticed that Barcelona argue a lot. On free kicks, corner kicks, they complain, they moan. No. It was unbelievable. that finally this kind of the kind of nonsense that we hear from these teams, the griping and the moaning, it caught them out. The goalkeeper Ter Stegen was looking down the field, and the defenders were, I mean, they were in some kind of conclave. And the other thing is, and I don't want to overstate it, he's a professional footballer. I'm aware of that. Trent Alexander-Arnold, to go back and whip the ball from the angle that he did, with the accuracy that he did, for it to land right in front of Origi, that is so hard to do. 9 times out of 10, you're trying to do it quickly and you shank it. It's a moment of clarity. It's a moment of vision of total perfection from the kid. I went absolutely nuts. Actually, I tell a lie. I couldn't really understand what I was seeing. I was waiting for VAR. I was waiting for, oh, you took that too quickly. I was waiting for just some kind of stoppage to explain the complacency of Barcelona.
Incredible. Yeah, it's funny because, you know, so much of the game we talk about, you know, tactics and matchups and things like this. And sometimes it just comes down to nothing more than a great footballer's intuition and instinct. Like, Alexander, no, you say that maybe they had said that Barcelona argue on free kicks or
no, they had. And
that was in the scouting report, but whatever. Like, ultimately, yeah, this happened.
You still have to execute.
This happened. This happened without thought, really. This was just Alexander Arnold who quickly saw something. Like you said, a quick glance from Divock Origi.
Yeah.
Two guys who were just on the same page. And like, I feel like it's the kind of thing that you can't give it thought, because if you give it thought, you'll start to overthink it and say, no, let me just play it safe here. Let's get, who was it, Shaqiri that was going to come over?
Shaqiri was.
But this is the thing. This is just pure instinct. I see it. Bang. I'm going for it. Goal. We just won the Champions League semifinal. It just, it all happened so fast.
Last week, Graeme Souness was on Champions League duty in the UK. And for some reason, he launched into this tirade about people, I guess the stats people, and I guess the Jonathan Wilsons of this world, who are, you know, they talk about tactics and they believe that tactics and desire and commitment are all netted together. And Souness, as an ex-football man, rails against that. And he said, be first to the ball, he said. If you're... One sentence, he said, if you're first to the ball, you can make things happen. Liverpool were first to every single ball. So let me tell you about my evening. So I watched the game yesterday. I'm coming out of my office and I'm clammy. I'm sweaty with joy. I'm a mess. Mm-hmm. And it's the night before my birthday. And I said, I'm cracking open a bottle of wine sent to us by a listener, Lee Sterling. Remember that?
That's right.
I said, I'm opening that bad boy. By the way.
Excellent.
Wonderful. And I'm going to sit down and I'm going to pay $2.99 to Bleacher Report.
Oh, you did?
I'm going to watch the whole thing again. Andrew, the relentlessness of Liverpool. We talk about this kind of pressing and this heavy metal football. This was something beyond. This wasn't heavy metal. This was Pantera. It was actually, it was beyond Pantera. It was trash metal. It was alright, it was Sepultura at their just their angriest for 90 minutes. There's a moment in the 81st minute where Sergio Busquets, who has been kicked and clattered round the Anfield field for 81 minutes. And he gets the ball in what you would describe as a semi-safe area. Mm. The centre circle on his side, of the Barcelona side. And out of nowhere comes this bat out of hell, Jordan Henderson. Back to the smashes him and wins the ball. There was no let up. This was the most unbelievable victory for that mentality, that we are going to go out there and we're not going to let you play. And you may have a better midfield and you may have the greatest player in the world, but guess what? You won't have time to breathe. We're going to suffocate you. Right.
It's so true.
Like, let's break it down.
Yeah.
That's a midfield that consisted of Fabinho, who is a good ball-playing footballer, but who did more... I've never seen tackles out of him and Henderson consistently all night.
It's not just that. Fabinho was yellow carded in what minute? 10th? 11th?
Early.
Early. He played the full 90, did he not?
He did.
And he's dealing with Messi and Suarez. Like, he's dealing with these... Coutinho, he's dealing with these players all night. And he managed to make it through with a fairly flawless performance on that yellow card. I mean, that could have been potentially dangerous for them.
But it's
for
just
a guy like that.
But it's like Trent Alexander-Arnold on the second goal. He gives away the ball. It's sloppy.
Mm-hmm. Gets it right back.
Straight back and whips a ball to Wijnaldum, who scores. Wijnaldum, who was raging. Wijnaldum, who was probably full of the kind of rage that Sepultura have live on stage, because he wasn't starting. And look what he does and come on. And the header. Just unbelievable. Jose Mourinho, who is just brilliant on television now, sums up what this game was about and sums it up in one man's name.
I didn't expect. I told impossible is nothing. I told if it's possible, Anfield is one of the places to make the impossible be possible. But I have to say that for me, this remontada has one name, Jurgen. I think this is not about tactics, this is not about philosophy, this is about heart and soul and fantastic empathy that he created with that group of players. They had the risk of finishing a fantastic season without nothing to celebrate, and now they are one step from being European champions, and I think Jurgen deserves.
What's remarkable about that to me, Andrew, is he's just outlined everything that he was not at Manchester United.
That's a great point.
He can see it. So when we talk about Mourinho wanting to live in a constant state of fear, maybe he doesn't have the charisma. Maybe he doesn't have the ability to make players want to die on the field for him.
But there was a time, I mean, you hear from former Chelsea players that adored him.
Damien Duff says it all the
right.
time. He would have ran through walls. But maybe somewhere along the line, he stopped doing that. Or he can't project in the way he used to. But back to Klopp. This is a unique chemistry. There was a moment right at the end where James Milner, who is the epitome of coaching, Klopp coaching, that he's taken this weird transfer that I trashed and has made him into this warrior on the field. And he comes over and he picks him up. This utility man, this man for all seasons, this guy that can slot in at fullback, that can slot in at centre mid, that can play anywhere for this team. And he picks him up and Milner's crying.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was almost, I thought he was going to whip him in his arms and go full officer and a gentleman with him, you know, just like carry him off the field. But he was exhausted through the empathy that's created between manager. Mourinho summed it up perfectly. A lot of people roll their eyes. A lot of people roll their eyes about Klopp, the charisma, the laugh, the hugs, all that. This team is fighting and dying. And it wasn't the first choice team.
Well, that's what makes it so amazing. And it's something that I actually mentioned last week that I wanted to bring up again today, because I said one thing for Liverpool is that you have a team of unsung heroes. You know, when Salah is out, when Firmino is out, in comes Divock Origi, who scores two goals. Like you said, Wijnaldum, not starting the game, comes in as a sub at halftime, scores two goals. Like, if I told you before the game that Liverpool are going to win 4-0, maybe you say Origi gets one, but who's guessing that these are your heroes? You think maybe Mane gets a hat trick, maybe Milner converts a penalty. Like, this is, you know, for these two guys to step up in the way that they did, it's a testament not just to them, but it's a testament, like you said, to Jurgen, who he instills this in every member of the team. I'm watching when that game ended because the game was riveting unto itself, but you couldn't turn it off because the scenes at Anfield afterwards really were truly memorable. And you're watching Jurgen go from player to player. You know, you get players who are as meaningful to them as Alisson and Mane, and he's hugging them. And then he's going over to people that you don't know. You don't even recognize these people, and he's hugging them in the same way.
Yes.
And you can tell every person on that club feels a sense of purpose, a sense of belonging. We had in our interview with Bruce Grabelaar, he talks about Liverpool. And when I asked him, what is this feeling, these European nights, he says the thing about it is it is truly a family.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there was a period of time when it went away. I don't mean for that to be an indictment on the managers who have been there in the years since. Some of them are former Liverpool men.
Yes.
But for whatever it is that went on in those past years, Jurgen Klopp, if there is this family feeling around the club, he has brought it back. There is no question about it. And you see it on the faces of every one of those players after the game.
No, I totally agree. And it was really emotional because there's such a connection between the fans and the players that has somehow endured in a modern era where the players don't live down the road from you and they don't go to the bar and they don't go to the same shops as you. Mm. So you have to create something, some kind of link with the team, and somehow Klopp has managed to do that. And Klopp is very aware of this. Remember when they used to come on the field? Remember they had a draw last year against West Brom when they're fighting for top four? A draw. And they snatched a draw from a defeat. Regular season game. And they go down and Klopp is like, come on, come on, come on. And they clap the cop and you're like, oh my God, I'm embarrassed. Like, it's West Brom. Come on, guys. We got to be bigger than that. And me, I'll take the criticism. When he jumped on the field after the Origi goal and showed that passion and hugged, was it Dejan Lovren or whoever it was he picked up, and he got fined, obviously.
Right.
And I looked at that and I thought, small time. Why are we doing this? But it's all building towards something. I care about you. I care about this club. We are a family. I care about the history. I care about the people who come to the games. And he alluded to the fans as well. The atmosphere was red hot. And Klopp was asked an interesting question about the kind of symbiosis between the fans and the victory last night.
Yeah, he was asked if this would have happened in an empty stadium.
Well, I thought it was a great question.
Yeah.
Nope. Just chance. We know that this club is the mix of atmosphere, emotion, desire, and football quality. Without you cut off one, it doesn't work. We know that. I said it before. For me, this club, if I have to describe it, it's a big heart. And tonight, it was obviously like crazy. What is it? Bound? No, but if the heart is doing this?
Pounding.
Pounding like crazy. And you could hear it probably and feel it all over the world. So it's just unbelievable. I'm so happy that we could give the people this experience. And I'm really happy about having another chance to get the things right from our point of view, obviously.
I think he started there by saying no chance.
He said no chance that an empty stadium could produce that. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Now, I'm one of the first people to admit Premier League grounds are not what they used to be. 3 o'clock kickoffs, mundane games, they're not like as regularly raucous.
But they can be.
And it's there. And if you harness it, it can be something amazing. And at Liverpool, it is a real living, breathing thing. It's such a cliche, but it's a 12th man. It absolutely is. And it drives them on. And there's so much, the history of the club and the heartache. You know, people went to Liverpool matches and never came home. And there's a sense of ownership of the club by the fans, but there's also a sense of responsibility from the players. And I think that maybe under some managers, that responsibility was not properly addressed. And under Jurgen Klopp, it has been.
Certainly has. His honesty is refreshing afterwards. I mean, this game was madness for it to go down the way that it did against Barcelona, of all teams, to have done this. Klopp was asked afterwards just about the game, and people who were trying to dissect it, how do they do it? The manager didn't even know how they did it. He said the whole game was too much. Winning is difficult, but with a clean sheet, I don't know how they did it. He doesn't even know.
But that's the point. Liverpool, I told you before, we don't have a Pirlo, we don't have a Busquets in the middle of the park, a guy who's going to control things. What we have is latent aggression. What we have is, when I smash into a tackle, that ball's going to break somewhere and we're going to be on it, and things happen in those moments of chaos. And then we have the quality to execute a pass, to execute a finish, to do something special. That's what that is.
Yeah. Now, on the other side of this, we do have to mention Barcelona here, because you know, you're talking about the aggression from Liverpool, and it was clear to see, and it's why they won 4-0. There's no question about it. In the end, I think the right team won. Like, you look at the aggregate score of 4-3, and if you just flew in from Mars and saw that scoreline, but you know, you knew these teams were good, you could say, yeah, I could see that. You never would have thought it would go the way that it did. But in the end, I think, you know, Liverpool beating Barcelona 4-3 over two legs, is that's feasible. But for Barcelona to concede these four the way that they did in succession, they will get up from it. They're maybe the greatest club in the world, with the greatest player the world has ever seen, who is still in his prime, make no mistake about that. But this is 2 years in a row now where this has happened. Last year against Roma, which maybe, looking back on it, was more inexcusable than this, even, simply because I do believe this Liverpool team is an all-time team. I don't know that we're saying that about last year's Roma.
No, we're definitely not.
But for this to happen 2 years in a row to this edition of Barcelona, are people going to pay for this with their job? Or is there going to be massive turnover in terms of the roster? Like, this, it's great and all for them to win the league. La Liga is that's no small feat. Atletico, yeah. Real Madrid, you know, that's a great thing. But, I mean, who are we kidding? Barcelona's aspirations are simply higher than that. They believe they should be winning this competition every year, especially when they see what their biggest rival in Real Madrid have been doing over the last 5-6 years.
Now, I can't be guaranteed that it would have made a difference, but I thought Valverde picked a lumbering midfield by playing players like Vidal. I thought Vidal actually had a decent first half. But second half, Andrew, this seemed almost like Spurs did in the first half against Ajax today, like kind of slow and old and off the pace, and also unable to deal with the aggression that was being foisted upon them. Coutinho is going to, the reports out of Barcelona are just, Coutinho will be a sacrificial lamb for this team. He is, I mean, it's opened up a dam of, oh, he doesn't train well, he's not a Barcelona player, the coaches have been unhappy. The commentary was,
some of this just, I don't know, man. Some of this just feels so reactionary to me.
Well, now, does happen.
We're not in it day in, day out with Barcelona. We don't cover the team. You know, reporters who do see things differently, so I will defer to them. But, you know, they are waltzing to a league title. And what is it you always cite? Is it Brian Clough, who always talks about the true barometer of a team's greatness is probably how they perform in the league?
That's what he's always said.
Whether or not that's true, we can debate that. I think most people look at the Champions League winner typically as the best team in Europe and in the world. But Barcelona are waltzing to a title in La Liga. And they do this seemingly every year, it feels like, right now. Are things that bad? Was this just one bad night on the heels of a year ago suffering from one bad night?
Well, let's look at it. They did create chances last night. Really good chances.
They did.
And they did not convert them.
What if Ousmane Dembele scores in the first leg to go put that up? I mean, you think about some of these missed chances.
Well, it's true. Now, Liverpool, I think, it wasn't 3-0 did not reflect properly on Liverpool in the first leg, but equally, it could have been 4-0 had Dembele done his business. And you wonder about the debts there he got from Messi. And Messi kind of knew. There's a 3-0 left the door slightly open, especially if you get an early goal, as Liverpool did. 4-0, it would have put them in a kind of an insurance zone with that fourth goal. But with the way Liverpool played, you would never have known. Maybe they could have got like 5 if they had to. Anything seemed possible. Anything seemed possible.
There is one guy, not to cut you off, but I do want to call someone out, because by and large, I thought Barcelona did have moments where they were decent in this game. Mm. Like you said, 3-0 may not have properly resembled what the first game was. I don't know that Barcelona were worthy of being 4-0 losers in the second one either. But I feel so dumb. I gave all this praise to Jordi Alba after the first leg. I chose that moment to suddenly come out and say, hey, this guy is unbelievable. He was so bad in the second leg, I could not believe I was watching the same player. And I want to credit Henry Bushnell on Twitter. There was a moment in the first half, I believe, when Barcelona are bombing forward, they have numbers in attack, and the ball comes to Jordi Alba, and JJ, he's one-on-one with the keeper. And I didn't even really see it in real time, but Bushnell on his Twitter account, if you go back and look, he has like a freeze frame of the moment. Jordi Alba is one-on-one with the keeper. He has an angle. If he wants to take it, he could score this goal. And he chooses in that moment to play it back to Messi rather than take it himself. And he plays it back to Messi.
And it gets nicked away.
And nothing comes from it.
It gets nicked away by someone.
Yeah,
that was a brilliant tackle by Virgil van Dijk, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I just look at that. And this was after the first goal where Jordi Alba was at fault. And you think, okay, his confidence is gone. That moment early in the game, he's rattled and he's done. And you continue to see it throughout the course of the game. I don't want to put it all on one guy because a capitulation like that is hardly one guy's fault. But man, it stood out to me because I proclaimed him to be this great player. And I still think he is. But he was so bad. He was so bad.
But look at the first goal, the lackadaisical header.
Mm-hmm.
What is he thinking?
I don't know.
Again, Trent Alexander-Arnold losing the ball there. Okay, you can argue that shouldn't automatically lead to a goal. But with the way Liverpool are playing, it does. I thought Alisson had a really good game. That he made a save from, was it Jordi Alba as well, towards the end of the first half. He made a very solid stop from Coutinho early on when Barcelona were beginning to click. I remember that outrageous 1-2 between Rakitic and Messi, mm-hmm. right at the end, where it's basically a 1-2, but it's over about 20 yards, and Messi finds himself in at the back post. Now, he doesn't get the best connection he's ever got, but he volleys it at the near post, and he's got to make a save there as well. He was excellent. He like really was, and he was a calming force in that whole Liverpool defence, which, in the second half, it's Barcelona. They've got to create more than that, and they didn't. Because guess what? Every time they tried to do anything, it was...
Rage. That is angry music, if I've ever heard it.
But it is true. It was to meet that kind of... that level of ability of Barcelona's and to just suffocate it.
This is just... hasn't even sunk in yet. You know, I should tell you, and everybody listening, whatever, I'll tell all of you. You're all like family to me anyway. I was this close to crying at work today. Have you ever cried at work?
What a question. Probably tears of frustration working with you.
Well, no. You hid it from me.
I thought of a few people yesterday. I'll let you do your crying. Let me talk about mine for 1 wee second.
Yeah, yeah.
At full time, it was...
You did?
When I was talking earlier on the podcast here, I'm trying to keep it together.
Look, I'll say this. I don't blame you because, like I said, when the game ended and you watched the players line up in front of the cop. Players are crying. The fans are crying. I mean, you've heard a lot of renditions of that song. It was one of the most full-throated singing songs that I've ever heard from that stadium, and they've had a lot of good ones over the years. So I could see why you would.
It brought me back to Kiev last year, and there was this weird moment of silence when we kind of knew the gig was up and we weren't going to lift old big ears. And there was a lot of people just kind of 1,000-yard stare staring out onto the field, and it was this moment of silence. You couldn't hear anything, and the Liverpool fans were utterly, utterly quiet, and a breeze came in off the river, and it was like this warm summer breeze, and I was like, we mightn't be here again. We mightn't get here again. Mm-hmm. And then you're walking out of the ground and you're all together, like, and people were talking, and they just had so much faith in Klopp. It's unbelievable. He's like, a benevolent cult leader. He's like an amazing guru. And people are talking and I'm coming down the steps with a guy I've never met. And I said, all right, we've needed to change the keeper for a while now. He will address it. And we need to sort out something in the midfield. And he will. That signing was Fabinho. And you just felt like good. But you didn't know if you'd be back again. It was this weird melancholy. And
you're back. And you're back.
We're more than back. This is back-to-back finals. We're back in the elite of European football for the first time since before the ban. Like, we haven't been consistently. I know 2005.
Well, you went to back-to-back finals in the mid-2000s.
We went to, well,
or no, two and three years.
But right. It never, I don't know, it didn't feel like European dominance. And then we went into the wilderness during the years at the end of the Gillette and Hicks era, before FSG came in. This feels different. Ah.
Liverpool and Tottenham are going to play in a Champions League final. This next 3 weeks is going to be incredibly fun as we build up to this. I promise to everybody listening who are not Liverpool and Tottenham fans, we're not going to be insufferable. I swear to you, we're going to talk about everything. There's U.S. Women's World Cup to get ready for. There's Gold Cup stuff for the U.S. I saw DeAndre Yedlin, unfortunately, has had to have surgery and now will be in doubt potentially for the Gold Cup. So we are still going to do all that. MLS. I did actually have all this stuff for MLS that I was ready to talk about today. FC Cincinnati made a managerial change. There were trades. Justin Merrim is now a member of Atlanta United FC.
Which is interesting.
So I actually have like all this stuff here to talk about, but it just...
Throw it out the window.
Like, today is just not the day where people are itching for that stuff.
No, today is the day of there's games in MLS tonight.
I know. I will do a quick what to watch for. Before that, I do just want to say that for people in the Northeast or the New York area, we don't know yet, but we do want to do, because this is just too unique to ignore. Like Liverpool. You know, this happens. You guys, like I said, you guys were here last year, and I could see you being like, we've said repeatedly throughout this run by Tottenham, you don't know when this is going to happen again. This is something truly uniquely different and special. So we desperately want to do something uniquely different and special for the Champions League final, whether that be a watch party somewhere. We're gonna think about this over the next week and hopefully have something for you.
Because last year it was JJ in the back of a taxi. Going to his hotel in Kiev, and that was fun, but you were like the anchor.
This is such a weird feeling right now, because here you and I are, you know, you've got your Liverpool jersey on, I got my Tottenham jacket on, and when you came in tonight after the Tottenham game, we gave each other a big hug. And we're cheering with each other the way we started the podcast tonight, screaming, oh, yes, at the same time. Like, we're united right now in this mutual joy that our teams have gotten to this point. And then we're going to wake up tomorrow and we're going to realize, oh, wait a minute. I'm playing that team now. Like, I'm almost worried about a mutual watch party with you and me, with fans of Spurs and Liverpool. I'm almost worried because, like, the emotion of what just went down in the semifinals is just at such a fervor for both of these clubs right now that I'm a little nervous.
Have we got any operatic music? Because I feel like this is a trailer.
No, I don't.
Trailer for film. Operatic music plays. This summer, two friends, two brothers, torn apart by a final they never expected in a year that's been something else. For the Champions League. And then it'll cut to me and you having this joyous moment. It'll show our hug in slow-mo. Mm. Torn apart by the clubs they love. And it'll show you, then cut to you, turn around. I loved you, man! What have you become?
I'll make a promise to you right now. I swear I'm going to be as good during this time as I can possibly be. I'm not going to be a D. I promise.
It's going to be very hard for me.
You're such a bad guy. It's just in you.
You don't think at any point I'm just going to go, look, this is the culture club versus the little imposter and all that kind of stuff.
But you know what? I'm at a point right now where I'm embracing that. I kind of enjoy, you know, because when Tottenham have had these moments along the way, when they were in the title challenge against Leicester, you know, they weren't they weren't the underdog, the fun underdog story. That was Leicester.
They were like, why aren't they doing better?
Even going into today, like Ajax may be a better team than Tottenham. I know Tottenham went through, but Ajax really might be. But even still, Tottenham had made it to a Champions League semifinal, and they still couldn't really own the fun underdog story. That was still Ajax. Now we can have it. Tottenham against Liverpool, you're the clear favorites. You may end up winning the league. Who knows, come the end of this weekend. So if you want to take that tact, I will own that. I'm enjoying the underdog role in this.
Can I mention Christian Eriksen very quickly?
Uh-huh.
Because Ireland have played Denmark regularly, I've seen his post-match brutal honesty. It is brutality. He does not mince words. He is the kind of guy where, you know, if you came in and you said, oh man, I love this new jacket. What do you think of my new jacket? I'll go, yeah, it's a great jacket. Even if I think it's horrific. Like, Christian Eriksen will go, it's horrible. Take it off right now. Burn it. Never speak of it again. Tonight, he said, Ajax were definitely the better team over the two legs. He just said it. Came out and said it straight away. And then he goes, and then he was asked about the comeback, and he goes, well, we had to do something. Like, what was the... He said the other option was
I have some of his quotes here in front of me.
Read them.
He says, today it was non-tactical, more of a fight and heart performance. Hart and Lucas Moura, he's how we won the game. He deserves it. It's been a roller coaster of a season. For him to get us in the final, I hope he gets a statue in England after this. We are blown away.
And he's so honest that he probably will call up Daniel Levy and say, how's Lucas's statue coming on?
Oh my God.
We have a mailbag.
This is so awesome. We do?
Yeah. I have a quick one because, by the way, we're in the thousands of... I don't think I'm going to be able to get back to everyone who wished us well. Like, in this tribal moment, football has never been more weaponized in terms of rivalries of fans than in the social media age. But a lot of people who, you know, give us a lot of abuse during the regular season have been almost human about what happened over the last 2 days. But anyway, do you want to do a quick mailbag?
Super quick, because I still have what to watch for.
Oh my God, all right, okay. Mailbag, first of all, this is a very well-intentioned message that was sent, a Twitter tweet. Ishmael, this is worth looking at. It's amazing how important and influential a football match can be. This is from the House of Commons, and the first voice you'll hear is Jeremy Corbyn, leader of the opposition. He is referencing Liverpool's amazing win as a way of a jibe at the Prime Minister, Theresa May.
In view of the amazing performance of Liverpool last night, perhaps the Prime Minister could take some tips from Jurgen Klopp on how to get a good result in Europe.
Ooh, burn.
When we look at the Liverpool win over Barcelona last night, what it shows is that when everyone says it's all over, that your European opposition have got you beat, the clock's ticking down, it's time to concede defeat, actually we can still secure success if everyone comes together.
Sick burn, girlfriend. That is just so horrific.
This is what it's all about, JJ.
So Ishmael goes, it's amazing how important and influential a football match can be. There's nothing more important than football, but it's utterly worthless when these people are talking about it.
Well, they're allowed to be fans.
I just
don't love when they're using it for political games.
Yeah, it's a meaningless attempt at political point scoring, and it's a cynical. And these are people who are bringing the country to the point of it might actually be hard to sign players for Liverpool and Spurs. And because of Brexit, and I just don't want to hear from them.
When I was in fifth grade, I ran for student council president. And in my speech...
an honorable man.
I referenced the Mighty Ducks and the way they came together. I was in fifth grade. These are professional politicians using the same... Essentially, insert Liverpool with Mighty Ducks. They made the same speech as me. I did win, by the way.
Oh, I bet.
Mr. President is really what you should probably be referring to me as.
I bet your policies...
You never lose that title.
I bet your policies were weak. You were a weak leader, and there was a military coup in the school, and you were ousted.
They had me held up in the boiler room.
The tanks rolling in. At Fidel Cash Flow 203. Can't wait to hear the smug Andrew Gundling and exceedingly self-satisfied JJ Devaney barely keep it together and share joy, only to gradually turn on each other when they begin analysing the looming final. This will be the true test of their partnership. So
it is funny. Like, I wonder how many people out there who are Arsenal fans or Everton fans who thought, you know what, like, I'm curious what they have to say about it. I'll listen. And they heard the way we started with us screaming, oh,
just turned off.
No, I can't do it. They just shut it off immediately.
Yeah, I'd say there's a few of them, all right. Joey R. So if at JJ Devaney and at A Gundling both fly to Madrid to watch their teams, how are we going to have a podcast? The next few CO Soccer Pods are going to be absolutely mental. Well, that's why it makes sense that we have a watch party and do something along those lines here in New York.
We got to mobilize.
By the way, guys, if you know of a bar that will be full that is not partisan, let us know. Let's get involved. Let's start some kind of conversation here. Please get in touch. You can get us on Twitter at CO Soccer Pod or caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. At Spaceman619, does this mean the end of the pod for good? Yeah, I mean, you did threaten.
Yeah, I had said. Because this is what I haven't referenced yet is that now this was my nightmare. This was always my nightmare, was for Tottenham to wind up against you lot in the final.
And me lording it over you.
It's happened.
At Garcia George 17. Liverpool Spurs UCL final. I'm in Philly, but I'd love a caught offside watch party in Manhattan. That is the way we are thinking. Cale Wilson. The most anticipated pod since Trinidad. I mean, I guess.
You know, it's funny someone said that, because I think I said almost the same words tonight that I said that night, but for the complete opposite reason. I remember at the start of the Trinidad podcast, I said, this is the podcast we never thought we'd do, because the thought of the U.S. not qualifying was crazy. And I think I said the same thing tonight. This is the podcast I never thought I'd do. Tottenham in a Champions League final against Liverpool. Interesting parallel.
It is interesting. After Trinidad, you went into paralysis of the mouth and
sat here for 20 minutes.
20 minutes staring at a screen, refreshing, hoping that something was wrong in the table.
VAR! VAR!
Save us now. Let's not do this again.
By the way, had VAR existed, the U.S. would have gone to that World Cup. But at any rate.
Let it go. Lane at Lameo 2000. While your podcast will be fun to listen to, I was going to enjoy the misery, I thought. But now I will enjoy the elation. Snick Tunes. Question. So remember a couple episodes ago when Andrew said he'd quit the pod if Tottenham lost in the ultimate caught offside derby in the Champions League final? Lol. JJ, how would you feel if Tottenham won the final? Could the pod go on? Yeah, I love this too much. I love what we do too much. I would keep it going.
That podcast is going to... I'm saying it right now. Oh. That's going to be a really, truly difficult one to
for
do.
Someone. But we're professionals.
Are we?
We are.
What is this?
I hate when you do this. How in the moment of the greatest joy can you be this?
We're two fans. Look at us right now. Look what we're wearing. We screamed like children at the start of this. What's been professional about the last hour and 15 minutes?
Can't you let joy into your heart for one week?
I'm so filled with joy right now. You can't even believe it.
Since that will not happen because we all know you too much and I know deep down you both love each other all. Hypothetically speaking, though, who's solo... He's spitting us up. He's doing a Mike and the Mad Dog on us. Hypothetically speaking, though, whose solo pod would be better, get more listens, if you just couldn't stand each other anymore and split up? As always, love the pod. Nick, you are an instigator. Well, obviously, mine would do way better.
Of the two of us, only I have actually done the solo pod on this. Ooh. So it has happened.
Yeah.
It was an amazing episode. Probably our best.
That happened once.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I let this side down.
You went back home and you said, I haven't watched games. You have to do this alone. I was like, at first I felt like Garth in Wayne's World.
Oh, that's right.
When he's just staring at the camera. We're having a good
time.
Right. But then I gathered myself and it was brilliant. Not a bad idea from, who was that tweeted that?
Split us up. Which would you take, the caught or the offside?
A total name change. Speaking of which, I'll remind people once again that we have nothing to do with the website Caught Offside.
Yeah, whatever slurry they're putting out this week.
Hammer that home. I'm not just saying that. People seem to think that we get messages from, hey, we want to write for your website. No, that's not our website. We just happen to have the same name.
Plus, we can barely read or write.
Super quick, what to watch for. Thank you to everybody who did send in messages. We only got to read a small fraction of what was actually sent to us, but we'll have time over the next few weeks. That's for damn sure. Let's see. Very quick, what to watch for. I feel bad, JJ, that I've given like real short shrift to the Europa League semifinals with Chelsea and Eintracht Frankfurt. 1-1, second leg for Chelsea. Both of these are Thursday at 3 o'clock. And then Valencia and Arsenal as it goes back to Spain for the second leg. 3-1, Arsenal with the advantage there. I would say that there is a very strong chance for all the people who, you know, sometimes message into us, oh, you talk too much Premier League. It's too Premier League centric. It's not even the best league. Look, I will plead guilty that we are too Premier League centric. That's just the way it is. And I think people who listen to this, you just kind of know that by now. But to the people who don't think it's worthy of that, we are staring at the possibility of both the Champions League final and the Europa League final made up exclusively of Premier League teams. In a season, by the way, when it felt like there were only two good Premier League teams, with Manchester City and Liverpool, and only one of those two will be represented in a final. So how bad is this league?
Why do I feel like one of these teams, and it looks like probably Arsenal going to Valencia, that doesn't seem, that is not nailed on, even at 3-1.
You don't think, I don't know, Arsenal are going to, with the fact the top four is now probably, not definitely, but probably out of their reach.
I mean, they've been good in Europe.
There has to be a desperation there for them to, this is it now. Their season will be defined by what happens.
They're going
to
tear up the narrative by being awful.
And by the way, what has happened the last couple days is exactly why I will not concede the top four, like with Arsenal and Tottenham. I don't care what that goal differential says. We just watched the insanity of this sport. I'm not conceding anything.
And that's why I'm not conceding the Premier League.
Speaking of which, here we go. It is the final weekend. Like, I feel like this in itself, it should be a full podcast. The final weekend of what has been an unbelievable season, this title race, which we have been riveted by since August, will culminate Sunday, 10 a.m., Brighton and Manchester City, Liverpool and Wolves. Here's what you need to know, essentially. A win is the simplest way for Manchester City to take the title. A draw or a loss combined with a Liverpool win would swing the title over to Liverpool. It's worth noting that a draw will not be enough for Liverpool. They have to win.
Have to win it.
That is what is at stake. It's not an easy assignment for Liverpool. I know Manchester City are on the road at Brighton, and Brighton have fought admirably recently against Arsenal, against Tottenham.
But Pep is
hard for me to see
Pep,
City not
Pep was
winning.
Asked about the squad. We're bringing everyone, and we're going to attack. So he's gone full Game of Thrones, like as if he's bringing the entire battalion. And I guess he has to. He can't take any chances. Brighton are on the beach, though, literally.
Well, they have fought recently. I mean, they were on the beach. You know, Cardiff had assured Brighton that they'd be staying up.
Yeah,
next
so they
season,
knew.
So, and they fought like hell against Arsenal. So who knows? This is a chance for them to make their mark in some way, in a very unique way. So you say they're on the beach. I don't envision them rolling over. They have a chance.
I'm not saying that.
They have a chance to impact the title race. That's a kind of a potentially a once in a lifetime chance for them to be a part of the story.
Chris Hughton's a total pro. They've got, you know, decent center backs in Dunk and Duffy.
They were tremendous last week.
Yeah, but I just don't know.
And then the only other race really going on, like I said, it is the top, the fourth and fifth spots are still at stake. Burnley will host Arsenal. Tottenham will host Everton. A win or draw seals fourth place for Spurs. They can lose this game as long as they don't completely S themselves. Which is, it could happen.
It would be in keeping with this season for you guys to poop your pants at the weekend, wouldn't it?
This season, man.
Crazy.
I think that's it.
It's not it.
I think I've run out of words.
Championship semi-finals, guys. So if you haven't been keeping up to speed, Leeds are in the middle of an implosion that would make the top four blush. But they are taking out on Frank Lampard's Derby County. And in the other tie, it's Aston Villa versus West Brom. So Leeds are on the road. They are going to the baseball ground. It's no longer the baseball ground. Pride Park, Saturday.
How do you forget Pride Park?
Yeah, but it used to be called the baseball ground, which was a cooler name.
Ain't nobody.
I don't have the rest of the lyrics, but isn't his next line about coming to Pride Park?
Ain't nobody going to Pride Park.
Ain't nobody.
That's when Robbie Savage was a Derby County player and decided that Twitter, he was going to make Twitter He created Twitter for footballers.
Ain't nobody coming to Pride Park.
Getting the three points.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So Leeds go there, and I'm sure with Robbie's song ringing in their ears, and then the local derby, which will be, oh, talk about me and you going head to head. This will be feisty. The Boing Boing Baggies play at Villa Park on Saturday. So the 7:30 a.m. kickoff Saturday for Villa West Brom, 12:15 Saturday for Derby County Leeds United. Both, Andrew, on ESPN Plus.
Oh, the championship playoff is so fun. It gave us the Troy Deeney moment.
It's utterly compelling stuff, and the final can often be really, really great.
There you go, man. Oh my God, this has just been the best. Hey, one more time. For all time with these.
Take it quickly. Oh, wonderful thinking. Origi, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant from Liverpool. And for Barcelona, chaotic, catastrophic. And it's 4. And they do lead now, not just on the night, but on aggregate. Comes to Dele Alli, through to Lucas Moura. Lucas Moura has fired Spurs through to Madrid. To the Champions League final!
Good God in heaven!
The Champions League final!
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see ya.
Oh, wow.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.